This is the Adventist World Radio, and you are listening to The Voice of Hope. For more information, please feel free to write to us. Our email address is bible@awr.org, or you could also call us on WhatsApp at +1 224 222 0777.
Hello and welcome to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Dr. Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. And produced in the studios of WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. I'm Jeff White. This is NWS 787 edition of WaveScan for release on Sunday, March 24th, 2024. On WaveScan today, Radio in Libya, Part 3, the story of the Mebo 2. And we'll talk with two people who are very involved in making shortwave audio sound as clear and strong as possible. Well, the last 2 weeks here in WaveScan, Ray Robinson has presented the history of radio broadcasting in the North African country of Libya. But there's one more aspect of broadcasting in Libya that we haven't covered yet. That's hinted at by the country entry for Libya in the 1978 edition of the World Radio TV Handbook, which lists two shortwave transmitters on the radio ship Mebo 2. There's a bizarre story behind that entry, which deserves digging into. So here once again is Ray Robinson to explain what happened.
Thanks, Jeff. Probably the most successful of the 1970s offshore stations was Radio North Sea International, which broadcast from off the coast of Holland from early 1970 until the Dutch anti-offshore radio law went into effect on the 31st of August 1974. The station operated from a ship called the Mebo 2, owned by Mebo Telecommunications Limited, based in Zurich, Switzerland. The men behind the company were two Swiss engineers, Erwin Meister and Edwin Bollier. And using the first two letters of each of their last names, they formed the acronym Mebo. They purchased two Norwegian ships in 1969. The first was the Bjarkøy, which they re-registered as the Mebo. But when they realized it was too small to use as a broadcasting base, they bought a second vessel, the coaster Silvretta, which had been built in 1952. This they re-registered as the Mebo 2, and the smaller Mebo they retained as a tender for the Mebo 2 while it was anchored at sea. After the station's broadcast life in the North Sea came to an end, there was much speculation and legal wrangling as to what would happen to the ships next. That in itself is a long story, but eventually the ships left Dutch waters on the 16th of January 1977. During this period, the smaller ship, the Mebo, had been re-registered as the Angela. The Mebo 2 had its original full complement of broadcast equipment on board, two fully equipped studios, a 100 kilowatt RCA medium wave transmitter, two 10 kilowatt shortwave transmitters, a 1.2 kilowatt mono FM transmitter, and a 140 foot antenna mast. It also had another medium wave transmitter, a 10 kilowatt continental electronics unit, that had been transferred from the Radio Veronica ship, the MV Norderney. The ships had Dutch captains and crews from the Cape Verde Islands, but with them also went former Caroline and RNI transmitter engineer and DJ Robin Adcroft, who also used the name Robin Banks on air. Their departure was shrouded in mystery as they sailed south towards a new destination and a new role in the Mediterranean, which was to be unlike anything ever experienced by an offshore radio station before or since. On the 1st of February, they called at Ceuta, the Spanish enclave in Morocco, to take on fresh supplies of food, fuel and water. They then eventually arrived off the port of Tripoli on the 9th of February, and 5 days later dropped anchor side by side in the harbour, 150 metres out. The crew were all paid off, and only radio engineer Robin Adcroft remained on board. The ships had apparently been leased to the government of Libya. During February and March 1977, a number of non-stop music test transmissions were made by Robin from Tripoli Harbour. These transmissions on 1232 kHz, 244 metres, using a power of about 40 kilowatts, took place generally between 8 and 11pm local time, 1800 to 2100 UTC, and consisted of records and announcements, but without any station identifications. Later, some tests were also made on 773 kHz, 388 metres, using the old Radio Veronica 10 kW transmitter which had been installed on the Mebo 2. These test transmissions had to be halted after a few weeks because it was discovered that they were causing interference to local communication facilities in the Tripoli area. A further widely heard series of tests from the Mebo 2 began on the 2nd of May 1977 on 773 kHz medium wave, 6210 kHz short wave and 90 MHz FM. Again, the tests were presented by Robin Adcroft and consisted largely of music and announcements. But this time, knowing that some European offshore radio enthusiasts would probably be listening on shortwave, the occasional RNI jingle was inserted between records. At the top and bottom of each hour, the former RNI theme Man of Action was also played. On the 19th of May 1977, test transmissions also started in the 31-metre shortwave band on 9810 kHz, making a total of four transmitters broadcasting simultaneously from the Mebo 2, the first time that had happened in over 3 years.
Your shoulder transmitter test programme in the medium wave band at 773 kHz, 388.1 metre, and the 49-metre shortwave band at 6210 kHz. 31-metre shortwave band at 9810 kHz. On VHF FM at 90 MHz. This broadcast concludes at 1 AM. That's 2300 hours GMT.
Unfortunately, because of interference from the Russian Home Service on the same 31-metre band frequency, use of 9810 kHz had to be dropped in June and the 49-metre band transmitter was switched from 6210 to 6205 kHz. On the 29th of June 1977, an afternoon relay began on 773 kHz, 6205 kHz and 90 MHz of the English language programmes of the Socialist People's Libyan Arab Jamahiriya Broadcasting Corporation, SPLAJBC, itself transmitting from Tripoli on 1406 kHz, 214 metres. These relays, heard from 1600 to 1740 UTC, had been arranged by Robin Adcroft on instructions from Mebo director Edwin Bollier in Switzerland and were thought to have been for the benefit of Libyan embassies throughout the world. However, no feedback was received from this potential audience and the relays ended on the 16th of July, although the evening music programmes continued. On the 8th of August, both the Mebo 2 and the Angela raised their anchors and sailed east from Tripoli Harbour, calling first at Benghazi 3 days later, and then on to Derna Harbour, some 600 miles from Tripoli, and about as close to the Egyptian border as they could get. Relations between Libya and Egypt had become strained, and the main reason for the move was to jam Egyptian radio's transmissions on 773 kHz. This was effective in the local area, but not much further afield, as Egypt used 1,000 kilowatts, 1 megawatt, on 773 kHz. The Mebo 2's transmissions on 773 kHz were made using the 10 kilowatt former Radio Veronica transmitter, and they were identified with the call sign LBJ, meaning Libyan Post-Revolution Broadcasting. The main 100 kilowatt transmitter on the Mebo 2 was ready to be used, but at the last moment the Libyan authorities, perhaps wary of escalating the tension with Egypt still further, instructed the radio engineers not to retune the transmitter or turn it on. At this stage, programs consisted of music with no propaganda or information and continued for about 5 hours each night, half of that time being live programs presented by Robin Adcroft and the remainder pre-recorded taped programs. The Mebo 2 left Derna on the 30th of October 1977 for a new anchorage off Benghazi. After arriving off Benghazi, test transmissions were resumed on all three wave bands, but after 2 days, engineers were instructed to turn off the medium wave and short wave outlets, leaving only FM to carry the 5 hours of nightly programmes. The engineers were told to keep the transmitters silent until arrangements had been made for Libyan frequencies to be allocated to them. Despite this instruction, a number of relays of the FM test transmissions were broadcast on 6205 kHz shortwave in December 1977 and early January 1978. They were announced simply as a program of international music on 90 MHz FM. Interestingly, the station is listed in the 1978 World Radio TV Handbook, showing the frequencies of 773 kHz medium wave, 6205 and 9810 kHz shortwave, and 90 MHz FM. Apparently at that time it was the only FM transmitter in the country. On the 15th of January 1978, the by now regular programme didn't start as usual at 7pm local time, and an announcement broadcast later in the evening indicated that the Mebo 2 was actually sailing away from Benghazi Harbour. The radio ship eventually arrived off Tripoli once again on the 19th of January, and broadcasts consisting of a relay of the SPLA-JBC in English were made until 8:30pm local time. These programmes were mainly news bulletins, music and talks about international affairs. In February 1978, the Mebo 2 and the Angela both went into dry dock in Tripoli. Some damage on the Angela was repaired and both ships were repainted, the Mebo 2 in red with cream flashes and the Angela in blue, white and black. Whilst in dry dock, both vessels were manned by between 6 and 12 armed guards at all times. Coming out of dry dock, the vessels initially tied up against the quay opposite the British Embassy in Tripoli. Broadcasts resumed on the 12th of March on medium wave and short wave only, and on the 27th of March the 10 kilowatt medium wave transmitter was retuned to 1610 kHz, 186 metres. Reception reports were requested to Mebo's address in Zurich.
You're tuned to a program of international music in the medium wave band at 1610 kHz, 186 meters, in the 49-minute shortwave band at 6206 kHz. All reception reports will be acknowledged by QSL and the address to write to a reception report, box 113, Zurich 8047 in Switzerland. That address once again, reception reports, PO box 113, Zurich 8047 in Switzerland.
بنية المجتمع العربي من خلال مرافق الثورة والمعارك التي خاضتها على كافة الأفرقة داخلياً
On the 5th of April 1978, the Mebo 2 and the Angela became the official property of the Libyan government and were renamed Al-Fatah and Al-Mazira, respectively. A foreign language service of the SPLA-JBC started from Al-Fatah on the 11th of June 1978. Each day, six Arab announcers, three French-speaking and three English-speaking, travelled out to the ship in Tripoli Harbour to present live programmes. The announcers relied on radio engineers Robin Adcroft and Prince Holman to operate the technical equipment for them, and they were the only two Europeans allowed on board the radio ship. Foreign announcers hired to broadcast on the European service of the SPLA-JBC were required to pre-record their programmes in land-based studios. This broadcasting arrangement lasted only until the end of the month, when plans were announced for a new daily service, consisting of readings from the Holy Quran, to be broadcast using the 10 kilowatt medium wave transmitter on 1610 kHz and also on 6206 kHz shortwave between 0600 and 1800 UTC. On the 14th of August 1978, Robin Adcroft and Prince Holman decided to make a clandestine broadcast on shortwave to commemorate the 11th anniversary of the British Marine Offences Act in 1967. This transmission took place between 0500 and 0600 UTC, before the broadcasts of Holy Quran readings started, and was the last English language programme made from the former Mebo 2. By September 1978, all the European radio staff had left Al-Fatah and the ship was fully under the control of the Libyan technicians. In November 1978, they adjusted the medium wave frequency from 1610 to 1611 kHz in line with the new 9 kHz channel spacing plan. Al-Fatah was dry docked again in Valletta, Malta during June 1979, where she was once more repainted, this time in the Libyan national colour, green, and with the name Al-Fatah now on her bow. She returned to Libya in the first week of September 1979 and recommenced transmissions of SPLA-JBC shortly afterwards. Shortwave programming was logged on 7165 kHz in the 41 metre band, with the 1980 World Radio TV Handbook listing transmissions on 1611 and 7165 kHz. El-Fata continued to be used to relay Holy Quran readings from the SPLA JBC until mid-1980, with the last logging by international radio monitors being on July the 20th. The ships were expensive to maintain, and with new transmitting stations then available on land, the ships were no longer needed. Robin Adcroft said he went back to Libya in the second half of 1980 to supervise the decommissioning of equipment from Al-Fata in Tripoli Harbour. It was put in storage with the intention of later installation on land, although it's believed that never happened. Finally, both ships were unceremoniously towed into the Mediterranean and sunk as a result of being used as target practice by the Libyan Air Force. Back to you, Jeff.
Thanks, Ray. Next week, Ray will be beginning an occasional series looking at the history of the Zenith Radio Corporation, the company that manufactured the famous Zenith transoceanic receivers, beloved by many shortwave listeners. In shortwave, AM and FM stations everywhere, the most commonly used audio processors are Optimods from the Orban Corporation. The vice president of Orban and one of his largest dealers stopped by WRMI the other day to do some testing of their newest processor. Okay, we have a couple of guests in the studio today on Wavescan. And we're going to start out with Mike Pappas, who is the Vice President for Business Development, right, of Orban.
Absolutely.
Now, Orban, tell us a little bit about Orban.
Well, for well over 50 years, Orban's been building processors for radio broadcast and AM and FM and shortwave and myself and my business partner, David Day, and our investment firm, purchased Orban back in 2016. You know, we retained Bob and the engineering staff, and over the last 3 years, we completely redesigned a bunch of different product lines. And when we bought the company in 2016, Bob came to me and said, "Hey, you know, I've been developing this AM processor that's pretty amazing." And I looked at it and I said, "Yeah, we're going for it." And now we're down here at WRMI installing a shortwave variant of it on one of your transmitters tonight and getting it all fired up. And Daniel Hyatt from DNAV, who's one of our largest Orban dealers, is the guru of setting those things up in terms of optimizing their settings and making them really work and in shortwave. So he's down here doing all the big lifting. I'm just simply providing the plucky comic relief, as it were. So Daniel, say hello.
Hey there. How you doing?
You've been busy here.
clicking buttons and turning knobs.
Because now let me explain first. We have people listening to this program who are in the radio business and who will know Orban very well, and they'll know the Optimod processors, which is what we're talking about here. But for most listeners, they'll have no idea what it is. What's the importance, Daniel, of having a processor like an Optimod at a AM or shortwave station?
Sure. We want to maximize the reach of the signal, make sure the signal gets out and it can get into the ears and the receivers of those out there that desire to listen to the station. And the XPN audio processor increases modulation density in the signal and also pushes down the noise floor. So often these days we have so many cumbersome noises from electronics and from atmospheric disturbances that it's difficult often to pick up these signals. So the XPN really helps propagate that signal, get it further out, increases the dynamic quality of the audio, and just overall presents a better listener experience.
Now, I have been to, a lot of shortwave stations around the world, and Mike, most of them have Optimod processors, or say they're the best in the world.
Well, Bob Orban cut his teeth on building the world's greatest processing and coming up with solutions for broadcasters, whether it's AM, FM, television, or shortwave, that help the broadcaster get their mission accomplished, you know, which is getting the message out to the people who want to listen to it. And you know, we're honored that we've been able to continue that with Bob after we bought the company, and Bob's done some of the best work that he's ever done in his career since 2016. So it's been great. And you know, every time I talk to Bob on a call, my IQ goes up by about 10 points. It's Bob's brilliant, and you know, I just try to see if I can even stay in the same room with him.
Now, how much difference can an Optimat processor make?
You know, we've worked on numerous AM stations that had coverage problems. One was located in Ephrata, Washington, and wanted a usable signal in Spokane, which is 100 miles as the crow flies, on 810 AM. Now, that's a pretty big lift. And using the same processor, a variant of the processor that we installed here at WRMI, we were able to do that. And the customer was absolutely knocked out with it, and ended up putting three more of them in for three other stations he's got. And it's fun. You know, I grew up on AM radio, and I grew up listening to a Hallicrafter shortwave radio. And, you know, once you get hooked, you're hooked. You know, that's how that's how all this gets started. And the next thing you know, you're out here and playing with giant shortwave transmitters and optimizing the signal so that more people can hear the message.
Now, we have several really old Optimat processors here that were at the station back when it was family radio. But they're, you know, analog. They're little knobs to turn and stuff like that. But this new processor you've got, Daniel, this thing is all... It's all computerized, right?
Yeah, it's quite a bit of a departure from the classic Optimods where we saw board-mounted components. Now we've got DSP algorithms. And what's really unique about that in the transition between the classic Optimod design and the newer design on a computer-based software is we're no longer in a linear process. So when we adjust something, we try to tweak the dynamics, the compression, or adjust the bass or the mids or the treble. It's no longer a one for one. What happens is we give the box our input and we say we'd like it to sound like this, and we see a visual representation which mimics that of the classic design, but now it's actually goes through a software process that takes the most favorable route and the route that's going to be least fatiguing to the ears, the most pleasurable to listen to, and provide the strongest signal. And using our input, it decides the best route. So I guess at the expense of sounding maybe a little too bleeding edge, a little bit AI-ish, but with full user control.
All right. So this is all, you know, fairly complicated. And do you need a course in how to operate this machine?
Well, you don't need a master's degree in audio processing. You simply just need a good set of ears. And again, there's a coupling between the classic technology and the current technology. And where that lies is if you're accustomed to a graphic equalizer and you know how to make the bass or the mid sound good and find a center frequency on those, it's still the same type of adjustment. So it's easy to take that classic knowledge, apply it to the new design. Well, you're enabled by these specific software algorithms.
And you have sort of pre-selecting, what do you call it, you can select for music or news or whatever, you know, different audio settings, automatic settings, right?
That's right. The intelligence in the box allows the presets to transition between a music-based preset and then a speech-based preset. So, well, listeners may enjoy a unique quality to the way music is presented. When speech comes on by itself, it may not be as favorable. So the box we can actually set up in different modes, and when it detects speech, it'll slowly transition, nice and comfortable, nothing abrupt, and then ultimately present that appearance of the audio quality for speech. So, yeah, again, a bit of intelligence there in the box to transition between those two types of audio.
Now, Mike, the original AM processors were then, after that, there was an Optimat HF, and that was specifically for shortwave use, right?
Yes, and that used an all-analog design, and Bob has a patented analog Hilbert clipper, and for the HF shortwave people, that worked out really well because it built up a lot of modulation density. Now with what Bob's doing in software, we've certainly eclipsed what the 9105 HF can do in terms of modulation density and lower distortion. The downside the analog Hilbert clipper was that if you really ran it hard, you could generate a fair amount of distortion, which was not something that we really wanted. Used judiciously, it built up a lot of modulation density, but you know, like anything else, you could certainly abuse it. We have a lot of those 9105s out in the field, and they're very reliable, and there are a lot of folks that really like them. But, you know, it's analog. And with analog, components vary with age, and things drift. And there are a lot of things that long-term, you know, a box that Orban delivered in the 1990s. Let's think about that, how long ago that was. And certainly the world has changed a lot since then. You know, we don't use rotary dial telephones anymore, and we now use smartphones and Wi-Fi and satellite internet. And, you know, just like that, the world's moved on from doing that. And I think you folks are going to find out that after running that processor on your signals, that there's a lot to be said for doing that.
Now, with the price point of these machines, it's not something that individuals usually buy. I mean, it's for radio stations, right? But I mean, I know a couple of amateur radio operators who have them and use them.
Well, and we actually sell a surprising number of AM processors to amateur radio guys who are on 160 meters and want that Orban sound. It's great. You know, they should have at it, and they enjoy it, and it's fun. And, you know, we've got some people using 9105s on the amateur bands, including myself.
Where can you find OptiMod processors?
Everywhere.
Around the world.
Yeah, everywhere in the world. I dial up any AM or FM station anywhere in the world, and, you know, we've got roughly a 70% market share. And so odds are that if you're listening to something that's coming over the air wirelessly, right, odds are that it's been processed with an Orban processor.
Well, people will be able to hear the new XPN AM, right?
Correct.
On here at WRMI, currently on 5950 kilohertz. Thanks a lot for stopping by.
Thanks, Jeff.
That was Mike Pappas, Vice President of Orban, and Daniel Hyatt, the Principal of DNAV Incorporated, speaking with us in our WaveScan studio. Well, to end WaveScan this week, it's Libyan wedding music played on the bagpipe. Thanks for listening to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. Next week, the Zenith Story, Part 1. WaveScan is heard weekly on KSDA in Guam, AWR relays in various locations, WRMI in Florida, WWCR in Tennessee, Voice of Hope Africa in Zambia, and IRRS Italy. Send reception reports directly to the station you're listening to. Reports for KSDA and other AWR sites should go to qsl@awr.org. Other correspondence, not reception reports, can be sent to wavescan@yahoo.com. I'm Jeff White at WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. Till next week, good listening, everyone.
This is the Adventist World Radio, and you are listening to The Voice of Hope. For more information, please feel free to write to us. Our email address is bible@awr.org, or you could also call us on WhatsApp at +1 224 222 0777.